Welcome to Music History Monday for April 29th, 2024. I'm Bob Greenberg, and the title for today's podcast is The Duke. If you haven't already, please consider joining me on my subscription site at patreon.com/Robert Greenberg Music, where I blog, vlog, podcast, pontificate, review, and bloviate 4 to 6 times a week. We mark the birth of the Duke on April 29th, 1899, 125 years ago today, in Washington, D.C. By the Duke, we are not here referring to the actor John Wayne, who was born on May 26th, 1907, in Winterset, Iowa, but rather Edward Kennedy Duke Ellington, one of the greatest songwriters and composers ever to be born in the United States. Aside from their shared nickname, it would appear that the only thing Duke Ellington had in common with John Wayne was that they both suffered from lung cancer. In Ellington's case, cancer killed him at the age of 75 on May 24, 1974, at the Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center in New York City, and not at the UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles, as is inexplicably claimed on certain websites. Born in Washington, D.C., he grew up at 2129 Ida Place, now Ward Place, Northwest, in the district's West End neighborhood. His father, James Edward Ellington, worked as a blueprint maker for the Navy Department and on occasion as a butler, sometimes at the White House. His mother, Daisy, born Kennedy, was the daughter of formerly enslaved people. Theirs was a musical household. Both of Ellington's parents played the piano. We are told that James Edward Ellington preferred to play arrangements of operatic arias, while Daisy preferred the semi-classical parlor songs that were popular with the middle and upper middle classes at the time. And let us make no mistake, the Ellingtons were indeed of the upper middle class, sophisticated, educated, upwardly mobile, proud of their racial heritage, and unwilling to allow their children to be limited by the Jim Crow laws of the time. According to Studs Terkel, writing in his book, Giants of Jazz, The New Press, 2nd edition, 2002, quote, Daisy Ellington surrounded her son with dignified women to reinforce his manners and teach him elegance. His childhood friends noticed that his casual, offhand manner and dapper dress gave him the bearing of a young nobleman, unquote. It was that noble bearing that prompted Ellington's high school friend, Edgar McEntee, to come up with the nickname that Ellington wore so very well for so very long. According to Ellington himself, quote, I think he, meaning Edgar McEntee, felt that in order for me to be eligible for his constant companionship, I should have a title. So he called me Duke, unquote. For the young Ellington, piano lessons were a must. It was, for children of his generation, and mine as well, an inevitable childhood rite of passage. Having said that, like so many red-blooded American kids, Ellington preferred baseball, at which he excelled. In his autobiography, he recalled that, quote, President Theodore Roosevelt would come on his horse sometimes and stop and watch us play, unquote. For our information, Ellington's love of the game ran deep, and his first paying job was selling peanuts at Washington Senators games. And because we all should know, the Senators, also known as the Nationals, played in D.C. from 1901 to 1960. It was in 1960 that the team broke the collective hearts of its district fans and moved to Minnesota, there to become the Minnesota Twins. Twins, as in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Ellington's first piano teacher was the spectacularly named Marietta Klinkscales. Oh my God, who could make such a name up? As a teenager, he took up ragtime piano and studied harmony, though as a teen, his growing love of music shared equal time with a real talent for painting and design. In 1917, during his senior year in Samuel Chapman Armstrong Technical High School, he won a poster contest sponsored by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and was offered a scholarship by the Pratt Institute of Applied Art. But Ellington turned the scholarship down because he had decided, thank heavens, to pursue a career in music. Paying his dues. From there, Ellington began his climb up the musical ladder, slowly but steadily building his reputation as a pianist and as a leader of increasingly large musical groups, first in the Washington, D.C. area and then in New York City. He held down a variety of day gigs. He painted signs, worked as a messenger for the U.S. Navy and State Departments, and, after having moved to New York City, he hustled pool. Thank heavens no one broke his thumbs, as happened to Paul Newman in the 1961 movie The Hustler. In September of 1927, at the age of 28, Ellington caught his big break. Writing in the New York Times, the music critic John S. Wilson tells us what happened. Quote, in September of 1927, when the band had expanded to 10 men, the Cotton Club, gaudy Harlem showplace, found itself in sudden need of an orchestra when King Oliver, whose band was scheduled to open there, decided he had not been offered enough money. Mr. Ellington got the booking, but first he had to be released from a theater engagement in Philadelphia. This was arranged when the operators of the Cotton Club asked some associates in Philadelphia to call on the theater manager with a proposition. Be big, or you'll be dead. He was big, and Duke Ellington began his 5-year association with the Cotton Club. Unquote. The Cotton Club. As the just-read quote would indicate, the Cotton Club was, in those days of prohibition, intimately associated with organized crime. What would become the Cotton Club was born in 1920, when the former heavyweight boxing champion Jack Johnson, 1878 to 1946, opened an exclusive supper club in Central Harlem on the top floor of the building at the corner of 142nd Street and Lenox Avenue. He called the place the Club Deluxe. In 1923, Jack Johnson sold the club to the gangster and bootlegger Oney Madden, 1891 to 1965, nicknamed the Killer, for the various murders he had committed on his way up. Madden had just been released from Sing Sing prison after serving 7 years for ordering the killing of a rival, a gentleman named William Little Patsy Doyle Moore. We may assume that in purchasing the Club Deluxe, Mr. Madden made Mr. Johnson an offer he couldn't refuse. A fascinating tidbit. It was at exactly this time that Madden hired a young pal, a former professional boxer, dancer, and minor league baseball player, to be his wheelman, meaning his driver. That young pal's name was George Raft, 1901 to 1980, who went on to become a movie star who specialized in portraying gangsters. In 1924, Oney Madden reopened the former Club Deluxe as the Cotton Club, primarily as a place to sell vast amounts of his bootlegged wine, spirits, and beer. Despite the fact that the Cotton Club was located smack dab in the middle of Harlem from its opening in 1924 until 1936, when it was moved downtown, and despite the fact that it featured the best Black American performers of the time, it was a whites-only establishment, writes Steve Watson in his book, The Harlem Renaissance, Hub of African American Culture, 1920 to 1930, Pantheon, 1996, quote, Black performers did not mix with the club's white clientele, and after the show, many of them went next door to the basement apartment of the club's superintendent at 646 Lenox, where they imbibed corn whiskey, peach brandy, and marijuana, unquote. The decor of Oney Madden's whites-only Cotton Club reflected pretty much every racist trope of the time. Murals depicted Black people as savages in jungles and as enslaved people in antebellum plantation South. We are told that, quote, a 1938 menu included this imagery with illustrations done by Julian Harrison showing naked Black men and women dancing around a drum in the jungle. Tribal mask illustrations made up the border of the menu, unquote. Back to Duke Ellington. The Duke Ellington Orchestra was the Cotton Club's house band from December 4, 1927 until June 30, 1931. As the band leader, Duke Ellington was expected to write and perform jungle music that played into the Cotton Club shtick, music heavy on drums, bass, and growling brass. But Ellington and his orchestra performed other music as well, and it was his association with the Cotton Club that made Duke Ellington a household name. That's because the orchestra was the featured act in a weekly, nationally syndicated radio broadcast direct from the Cotton Club. According to Ellington's obituary in the New York Times, the broadcast was nightly, which frankly doesn't sound quite right. It was during this period that Ellington wrote the music for the first of his classic songs, including Mood Indigo, 1930, and It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing of 1931. My friends, the list of great Duke Ellington songs, songs harmonically influenced as much by Claude Debussy and Maurice Ravel as by blues and jazz, is a lengthy one. Here are just a few such titles, every single one a charter member of the Great American Songbook. Sophisticated Lady, 1933. Solitude, 1934. In a Sentimental Mood, 1935. Prelude to a Kiss, 1938. Cottontail, 1940. Don't Get Around Much Anymore, 1940. I Got It Bad, and That Ain't Good, 1941. And Satin Doll, 1953. Please, keep in mind that Ellington's signature song, Take the A-Train, was composed in 1939 by Ellington's arranger and sometimes compositional collaborator, Billy Strayhorn, 1915 to 1967. Along with his songs, it was during the early 1930s that Ellington began writing extended works for his orchestra, works that defy categorization. Yes, yes, they employ what might be called the jazz idiom, and with it, a degree of improvisation. But at the same time, they go far, far beyond the 32-measure songs or 12-bar blues structures that characterized most jazz works. They are musical compositions in the traditional sense, and they display a degree of artistry that made Ellington, well, unique. In tomorrow's Dr. Bob Prescribes post, We will pick up from here as we encounter just such a composition, Ellington's Diminuendo and Crescendo in Blue, composed in 1937. Specifically, we will discuss Diminuendo and Crescendo in Blue as performed on the Duke's legendary album, Ellington at Newport, recorded live at the Newport Jazz Festival on July 7th and 8th, 1956. Until then, thank you. To sample and download one or all of my many courses on subjects musical produced by the Great Courses / The Teaching Company, please visit my website at robertgreenbergmusic.com.